Let's get started with this new visit of Putin to China. How do you see the current situation and why she needed to embrace Putin in your opinion? What's going on between Russia and China?
Well, first of all, we have to consider this in the context of the visits that have been performed by Olaf Scholz in early this month, or in April, sorry, and then Anthony Blinken and Janet Yellen, who were welcomed by very much some administrative individuals and no real, let's say, high-ranking official from the Communist Party or from Beijing, and so on. So the way Putin was welcomed in China indicates the considerable difference between the Western world and Russia and China, which is not surprising, by the way, for many reasons. First of all, we have to remember that the US is trying to isolate both China and Russia. With China, it started with Donald Trump. And in fact, Joe Biden continued the same kind of policy. They see, and in fact, it was even initiated by Obama in reality, this policy of isolating China, to see China as a major threat to the US, even kind of existential threat to the US, both in military terms, especially in the Pacific area, and in economic terms by the threat posed by Huawei, by TikTok, by EVs, and so on and so forth. So there is a sense in the US, and that was exacerbated by the COVID crisis in 2019, 2020, and 2021, when the US administration was referring to the Chinese virus and things like that in order to indicate that China was at the origin of the pandemic. Even some lawmakers threatened to ask for indictment of China because China tried to perform genocide by propagating the virus. So it was, we see a kind of an extraordinary irrational approach of the relationship between the US and China. So that was in the last decade. That's more or less what affected this relationship. And since 2014, but more specifically since 2022, we have the same thing with Russia. Although Russia is not considered as an economic threat to the US, for the reason that Russia is obviously not the same kind of economic power than China. But the problem is that for the US, and I just want to remember here that it was a kind of a debate that we saw in magazines such as Foreign Policy and things like that, the debate that how should we deal with Russia? Because Russia could be interpreted as an ally of Europe and hence allowing to isolate completely China. Or it was this idea that by weakening Russia, we would weaken the allies of China. And in fact, that's this option that prevailed in 2021, 2022, in order to shape the US policy towards Russia. So to take the Eurasian group as a group, and by, I would even say, making Russia to collapse completely in order to remove from China this powerful backyard that Russia could be for China. Backyard in terms, because we have to understand that China and Russia are very much complementary, not just in terms of commodities and raw material like oil and so things like that, but also because Russia has a lot of technologies that can be extremely useful for China. Aerospace technology, for instance, turbine technology, and so on and so forth. So there are a lot of technologies that were developed during the Cold War in the Soviet Union, in the field of metallurgy, for instance, extreme, very, very specific metallurgy. The Russians have still today, as of today, are the master in certain kind of technology, and the West has never been able to match the capacity of Russia. So we have here Russia that could provide this to China. On the other hand, China provides all this common conception issue, like vehicles and material that you can buy in stores and things like this. So the conception equipment of material has never been the strongest part of Russia economy, but it is the strongest part of China. So both countries are complementary. And this idea that the Biden administration tried to bring or drag the NATO and Europe in the same kind of, let's say, struggle against China by designing China as the enemy, and including in NATO, by the way, which is quite strange because NATO is initially designed to provide protection to European country against a possible Soviet aggression. But now it seems that NATO has, since the early 90s, is in search of an enemy. That's why they found an enemy in Afghanistan for a while. It was a failure. So they're still missing an enemy. And of course, Russia may be one, but under the pressure of the Americans, they finally acknowledged that China could be another one, a more substantive one or substantial one. So we have now a kind of a Western coalition against China and Russia. So meaning that both countries are in the same boat, so to say, and they share the same fate to some extent. That means that they have as a common enemy the US. They both are subject to sanctions and tariffs and different measures to prevent normal trade with them. So they are yes, as I said, they are both in the same boat. As a result, it's normal to see both of them to join their effort. By the way, even during the Cold War, at least the first part of the Cold War, as you hadn't so much this ideological struggle between the Chinese, the Chinese version of socialism and the Russian or the Soviet version of socialism, you had more or less a good cooperation between the two. It later became a problem between the two for ideological reasons, but in essence, these two countries are used to work together. Now they are pushed towards each other, and as a result, what we see and what we saw with this visit of Putin is simply the result of Western diplomacy. So we are today, we are trying to deplore or to mock this magnificent way the Chinese received or welcomed Putin. But in reality, that's the work of the Western diplomacy. We pushed each other together. So I remember that in December 2021, as there were some rumors about a possible war in Ukraine, there was this idea that China could reinforce Russia and things like that. So there was this discussion. So by the way, that's also at that time, there was some discussions about the sanctions against Russia, and therefore some experts were trying to assess the relationship between China and Russia. And I remember very well that in France, for instance, so the so-called economic experts said there will be no solid and robust relationship between China and Russia because they hate each other. And they even say that they consider each other as Untermenschen. So Untermenschen is the word used to design subhumans or something. And some experts were saying, well, you know, both of them are despising the other. Therefore, there's no way they can come along together, especially in a durable way. They have territorial disputes and so on and so forth. But in reality, at that time, by the way, when I tried to dig into this question of territorial disputes, I could find joint communiques of Russia and China announcing that they were burying these territorial disputes, that there is no longer any territorial dispute, that these two countries are willing to work together, and despite all these old differences and things like that. So today we have two countries that are not only willing to work together, but they are pushed towards a cooperation. And that's exactly what happens. As the West has deserted Russia, it opened a fantastic area of development for Chinese economy. And you could see that the production plant of Renault, the French manufacturer, a car manufacturer, were taken over by the Russians, and now they are used by the Chinese to produce cars. So we see that the both Russians and Chinese are extremely pragmatic people, and when they see the Western going away, they say, "Okay, that's an opportunity for us." They don't stop on the sidewalk and start crying. They act, and that's exactly their strength, in fact. And that's exactly what the Chinese have done when they were when Huawei was banned in the US and in several countries in Europe as well. They didn't stop and cry. They just managed to go along with the problem and find solutions to the problem. That's exactly what is missing in the Western approach to problem. We try to fight the problem instead of trying to find solutions. Both the Russians and Chinese have shown that they are trying to find solutions, and they did. And we see now both economies, by the way, are the two most growing economies, the most growing economies in the world, with probably India. I'm not sure about this, but I think it is. So we see that this way of the West trying to isolate people and try to ban countries, and this is the wrong approach to problems. And in the most striking in that is that it comes from the US, and the US, which has promoted for decades, if not century, I mean, a good century, this idea of free market, free enterprise, and international competition and all that. Now they are the champion of protectionism. They're the champions of tariffs on imports. They are the champions of trying to prevent the others to make better product than they do, because they are not able to, in fact, to compete. And that's the centerpiece of the problem, in fact. The West has left the industrial engineering for having more financial engineering. And that's what drives their economies. The problem is with that That means you are not, you may have a very high GDP, but this GDP is made just of services, of activities, of flow of money, but it's not associated with the production of hardware. And today we see that what is missing, in fact, is hardware. And that was exemplified during the COVID crisis, when the Western economies slowed down, and that was very strong in Europe, especially in France, where everybody was kind of locked down. But you still needed to have very simple things like toilet papers and masks and things like this, in addition to other items of common consumption. And they noticed that they were not able to produce that en masse. That means they had limited capabilities of producing that. But in fact, they relied very strongly on China, India, and in fact, external production countries. And well, of course, toilet paper is probably not the high-tech thing that requires height. But still, if you start to produce billion of rolls, it requires huge capacities. And the French noticed that they have lost this capacity because they outsourced all the production, most of the production, including production of car parts, for instance. The same applies to chips, for instance. And if you look at the iPhone, for instance, I mean, almost all components are outsourced in China. Meaning that when you start if you wanted to recreate a production line for this, you will not be able to do that. And incidentally, if you look at the profile of a China production, you will see that the strength of China is that it's the probably the only country which is able to have a vertical integration of the production for every product. I mean, if you buy an EV, for instance, you will see that every single component is produced in China. And the same applies to computers, the same applies to cell phones, and so on and so forth. They are able to produce every single component. That means the vertical integration is a strength, meaning that in the West, we have outsourced almost all our production capacities just because we make money with the result of what China produced. That's exactly the case of iPhone, in fact. I mean, if you start to look at the, I mean, I don't know the exact figures, and these are rough ratios, but roughly half of the value of an iPhone is, in fact, the material, the hardware, is produced in China. What the added value when you pay an iPhone or from your pocket, the residual value, that means roughly half of the price, is made by marketing. So they made a service, but it's not actual production. I mean, probably design and marketing are the two components that makes the iPhone so expensive in Europe, but. But the rest, all the rest, is in fact produced in China, meaning that China has a decisive advantage over Western economies. That was not the case probably 60 or 70 years ago, when at that time we had also vertically integrated production lines for cars, for watches, for, there was no computer at that time, but for wash machines and so on and so forth. We were able to produce every single component, but we are no longer able to do that because the cost of labor has become so high in the West that in fact it remains very cheaper to make that in China. As a result, we depend on China for this. And the trade war that US is engaging with China is in fact a lost war, because the US depends on China for almost everything that is produced or sold in the US, including cars, including cell phones, and so on and so forth. By the way, you see the problem, because when the Biden administration started to put tariffs and limitation on the export of chips, for instance, microchips, that reflected on the capacity production of other items. Therefore, you see now that the Chinese, again, they are not crying; they are just trying to find solution. You don't want to provide us with the microchips? No problem. We'll manufacture them. And they started to work hard on this, and now they are able to provide to produce microchips that matches the what was called a Western high top level production of microchips. As a result, you know, you have companies such as Qualcomm, Intel, and so on. They are no longer able to provide to sell their own chips, because the Chinese now are able to produce exactly the same one for a cheaper price. So instead of cooperating with these countries, we try to fight them. And with this idea, there is a kind of arrogance and hubris in this whole thinking, the Western thinking. We are still the same, or it is the same situation as the one we had one century ago, when everything was starting from Europe and arriving in Europe. I mean, you had engineering, the thinking, everything was located in Europe or in the US. And in fact, you had just the rest of the world providing commodities. That was it. But today, the thing is totally different. I mean, the rest of the world, as we call it, which is, by the way, not a very nice designation, but let's say the global South, to be a little bit more polite with the rest, this rest, so-called rest of the world. This global South, these guys are hard workers. They learn fast, and they are far from stupid. I mean, they produce more engineers that are produced in the West, in Europe, and if we see the level of education in Europe, as in the US, by the way, it's falling. I mean, we are just producing idiots, while in Chinese, Indian and other universities in the global South, they produce very experienced, very good engineers, very good designers, and so on and so forth. So they are completely able to replace what the West doesn't want to provide. So we have this kind of arrogance, thinking that we are the only one able to create things. But it's no longer the case. And we see that blatantly with EVs and those emerging technologies for renewable energies and so on. We see that the Chinese are now leading the market. They're simply leading the market. And China is, to my knowledge, I might be wrong, but I think it's the case today. The Chinese is the country that creates the most patents, the greatest number of patents in the world. So that was probably the case in Europe 80, 70 years ago, but it's no longer the case. Now it's the focus is it I mean the center of idea production is in Asia, and And that's and if we see, for instance, the thing, we see that with Iran, we see that with all these countries that have been sanctioned. In fact, they were constrained to develop their own capacities. And these guys are not uneducated people. They have a long tradition of education, a very long, probably even longer than we have in Europe, of education and a very subtle culture and so on. So they're able to recreate the know-how that we tried to prevent them to have. So this is the way the West is dealing with these countries is just completely wrong. And this the visit of Vladimir Putin in China exemplifies this. So I think we will see in the future, because of this willingness of the West to continue the war in Ukraine, trying to go further in the trade war with China, and we see the recent measures that the Biden administration has adopted to preempt the trade of EVs of Chinese EVs in the United States. This is a wrong calculus. We should better try to find how can we do better? How can we make better product? Chinese come with cheap product. Fine. How can we do better? What can we provide more? What can make product more competitive than the Chinese one beyond the price? At the end of the day, we see that you can still sell Ferraris and Rolls-Royce and not just Toyotas and Mazdas. So that means that you have to find the right segment that you where you want to sell your products and what kind of product you want, but you're still able to provide a product which is asked for by the consumer. So I think this is a lack of a strategic vision in the West, and we can see that both in military terms with Ukraine, but we see that also in political and economic terms. This absence of vision, this idea that we still have, I mean, we, the West, has to define the way the world should go, and therefore we go away from the law-based international order to the rules-based international order in order, and we define a way to go forward. But I think it's a total mistake, and we will see the difference. I mean, in 10 years from now, I think we may probably see a lot of disasters in Europe. We see that the Germans, I mean, the German economy, but the French economy as well, is in debt, and more in debt, by the way. The production capabilities are falling. And at the same time, the Germans have realized this because their investments in China has jumped to the moon, because they realized that in fact they are not able to produce affordable cars and other equipment, because I'm talking about Miele, I'm talking about these kind of companies that provide. How to say that? So this the equipment that you use in your kitchen and all that. You know, I don't. So the word is missing now in my head. But in any case, these companies have realized that they are not able to produce affordable product, so they have to produce them in China. And that's the reason why, by the way, Olaf Scholz was with a huge delegation of industrial and businessmen and all that, because they want to produce their product in China, because it's cheaper to do so. But There is a price to pay for this, not just a price in money, but a price in terms of employment, because that means that everything that you produce in China will not be produced in Germany. So, and there you see the consequence of having raised artificially the price of commodities and the price of energy and all that, because now it becomes more affordable to produce in China. Why? Because China, with its good relationships with Russia, gets the LNG, so the liquid gas, liquid natural gas, very cheap. And I say, and the same with oil. As a result, the Europeans, in fact, are trapped in their own trap. They wanted to sanction Russia, and today it appears that Russia has found a new market in the East, and this new market is taking advantage of the good relationship, paying cheap price for the commodities, and that makes their product more competitive than the Western product. So that's where we are. So and the whole this visit of Putin, I think, illustrates exactly the problem that the West has created by imposing those sanctions just for the sake of making the Russian regime or regime the Russian government to collapse.